Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Two Time Lab podcast. In this week's episode, we're going to be talking about time demands once again, not covering the models that we've mentioned before, but going into what we're calling the advanced model. Some brand new thinking based on the very latest research. So keep listening, some big ideas are coming right up ahead. Hi, and welcome back. So if you listened to the prior podcast on the topic of time demands or visited our page, which also describes some of our latest thinking and what we've been doing up until this point, you've probably known that time demands constitute the very essence of the work that we think human beings do as they attempt to complete their commitments. So here's the idea. We can't manage time. Time management as such doesn't even exist because for some people, physicists in particular, time is simply an illusion. Einstein said that and so have several other researchers. Bridget Claessens, a Dutch researcher, went a step further and said that time management doesn't exist. And there are a number of blogs and webcasts going all the way around the internet that actually make the same point. Time management does not exist. So if time management does not exist, what does? Well, let me give you a brief recap on the last podcast that we've done on this topic of time demands. A time demand is a commitment, an individual commitment to complete an action in the future. And it's something that we create as human beings in our minds as a placeholder. It's a form of what's called prospective memory so that we can complete actions that we can't complete in the moment. It's our way of reserving time, reserving action, reserving priorities in the future for our commitments or for tasks or for to-dos, however you might refer to them. So in the last podcast, we talked about the idea that these time demands are created by us and we act on them in different ways. There's actually a piece of the model that I left out in our last definition, which is that a time demand is an object. Now, what we know from our research, and this is very, very recent research, is that it's actually a psychological object. A psychological object is one that's created in the mind. It can't be seen, touched, tasted, smelled. It has no physical reality. It's simply a conceptual construct, something that we create. And the reason that we create this particular psychological object is so that we can complete an action in the future. So if you're tuning into our last podcast, you noticed that when we talked about time demands, we treated them as if they were objects, as if they were created in the mind, yes, but they were also acted on in different ways depending on where we put them. So for example, we could put a time demand in our calendar, we could put one in our task list or our to-do list, we could store aspects of a time demand, we could do all these different things to these objects because our research was telling us that you could treat a time demand as if it were an object that although we know for a fact that it can't be touched, we related to it as if it were an entity on its own that had a physical representation in the real world. So you could write it down, you could type it in, you could get rid of it by crossing it out or throwing it away. You could do these physical activities to these time demands. Well, here's the big change that we've made. We've taken that line of thinking and we've called it the simple model. And it contrasts with a brand new line of thinking that we've created, which is called the advanced model. So in the advanced model, the assumption is very different. So we retain the same definition, which is that a time demand is an individual commitment to complete an action in the future. That has not changed. We haven't changed the fact that it gets created in the mind, but what we have changed is this notion that the time demand has a representation in the real world. So we would no longer talk about a time demand being on your calendar. Instead, we would say that a time demand stays in your mind. So if it stays in your mind, what are its properties? Well, it's a product of our imagination. It obviously has no physical representation. It can't be touched, tasted. All those are actually still true. But also, the creation of a time demand occurs in response to a trigger. So that a trigger occurs in our environment, it somehow interacts with one of our commitments, and then we take the next step, and then we create this psychological object in our mind that's stored in a certain part of our brains. So once a time demand is created, we actually make a decision in a part of our brains called the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex. We decide, do we place it in a part of our brains? And apparently, the understanding about where the part of the brain is actually used is not very well developed. We're not clear as to what part of the brain stores time demands. Apparently, it's multiple aspects or multiple portions of the brain that are involved in the particular action. And we tend to store them, however, mostly in the rostral or anterior prefrontal cortex. So time demands reside in our brains. There's a physical action that takes place, but also there's a psychological commitment that spurs on the whole activity. So the big difference is that these time demands, once they're created according to the advanced model, only exist in our minds. They never leave it. Outside of our minds, what we might choose to do is to create a reminder, which points back to the time demand. We might decide to create an item in our calendar, which points back to the time demand. We might store some information that's related or required by the time demand. But the time demand remains a psychological object that stays in our minds. Now, of course, all we're doing here is trying to model the way we humans actually manage time demands. The jury is still out as to whether the simple model or the advanced model is correct. We don't know which one is the right one. Both of them appear to explain some aspect of the way we manage time demands that we're hoping will give us an understanding. So let's take a simple example. Say you make a commitment to pick up milk on the way home from work today. So the first possibility is that you could totally forget, and the time demand could still sit in your brain, but the reminders in memory could disappear. Now that could get triggered when you go to the fridge tonight and take out your cookies and you reach for the milk and there's no milk and you realize, oh, the time demand is still in your mind. However, the memory, the piece of prospective memory that you created to prompt yourself to buy the milk on the way home from work, that didn't work because there's no milk in the fridge. The other option that you could do is to revoke the time demand altogether. So someone else buys milk, sends you a text and says, don't worry about the milk, I already bought it, you don't have to. And then you'd revoke the time demand and it would disappear. Of course, you could execute the time demand on the way home as you plan. You could actually complete the action, purchase the milk, bring it home, and the minute you make the purchase, the time demand could disappear. You could add the time demand to a list of items that you make at the beginning of the day. Remember to buy the milk on the way home, and shortly before leaving the office, you check and say, oh yeah, okay, that there is one more thing for me to do today. I need to stop by the grocery store to pick up milk. You could also schedule it in your calendar, maybe with even an audible reminder that pings you at 6 o'clock. So as you're heading out to the parking lot, you know, I have to stop and pick up milk on the way home as you glance at your smartphone. Or you could just get lucky and someone could be happening to mention that they're also going to the store to pick up milk and you may have forgotten. And you say, oh yeah, I'm supposed to go also. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning it. I forgot. And that's just by pure luck. Now, each of these actions has a different impact on the time demand, which is in, as I said, your mind. So neglecting it causes it to change its state. Perhaps it goes from being alert or ready to being dormant. Revoking it, deciding not to do it, voids the time demand so that it no longer exists. Executing it has a similar effect. It no longer exists after you've completed the action. It may create further time demands, but that's a very different state. Adding it to a list causes it to change state. Adding it to a calendar or your schedule causes it to change state. And coming across a lucky trigger also changes its state. So here's the analogy I use. A time demand that is stored in your mind, depending on the activity that you do out here in the real world, it changes the state of the time demand. It changes your relationship to it. It still exists in your mind, but the way it's held is very different depending on the actions you take in the real world. So you take your actions, and your actions then have an impact on what happens with that time demand in your mind. So imagine this is going on all day, because all day long you're executing time demands. You're either taking one of two actions according to our research. You're either engaged in a habit, which is something that doesn't require your conscious attention, may not even require any memory whatsoever, or you're engaged in executing a time demand, which is a one-off activity that required the creation of a time demand in order to get it done. So one of the two, one thing we've discovered. The next thing that we've discovered is that when you create a time demand, you're also tagging at the very same time. So what do I mean by tagging? Well, you know the idea, if you're a user of Evernote in particular, or Gmail, and even Outlook actually, when you create an activity like a task or an item in your calendar, these pieces of software give you the freedom to add a tag. You can create your own. It could be a colored tag, red, green, gold, orange, black. It could be a numeric tag, 1, 2, 3. It could be high, medium, low in terms of urgency. It could be 1, 2, 3 in terms of importance, whatever it is. When you create these tasks or these objects in software, the software allows you to tag that particular object with a particular set or number of attributes. Great software like Evernote, for example, allows you to add lots of attributes. I don't know what the limit is. Some software only allows you to add one. So you've made this commitment to pick up the milk. When you make the commitment, it's more than just saying, I need to pick up the milk. When you make that commitment, that time demand gets formed, you also create what I call implicit tags. So you probably decide at the very same moment that you create the time demand when it's going to happen. Probably between 6 and 7 tonight. Where it's going to happen. I'll probably go to the supermarket, maybe Kroger's on the way home. And you also figure out the cost. It's an inexpensive item. I don't need to go to the ATM to get any extra cash. This place only takes cash. And I think I have $10 in my pocket. So that $10 should be enough to cover the cost of the milk. So although you've created a particular action as a part of the time demand also includes, in this case, three tags: when, where, and the cost. Now, if you were to take that time demand and place it on a list or in your schedule as a reminder for a later action, you could also transfer those tags over. You could tag it with the time, the cost, and the location that you're actually going to make the purchase. Those could be useful. They could also just introduce a whole bunch of overhead. It depends on whether or not that tag is useful to you. And we'll talk about the usefulness of tags in just a minute. But before we get there, so we human beings, you know, we don't just create time demands and leave them untagged in our minds. We create a whole number of implicit tags. And here are some of the ones that we create. Energy. Does this activity require high energy or low energy? Creativity. Do I need to bring my peak creativity to this particular effort, or is this just a habit? So when I'm writing my book, for example, I know that those activities require peak creativity and therefore they require a lot of quiet time. Is there someone else who needs to be involved? So you can tag a time demand with the fact that someone else needs to be in attendance in order to get it done, such as a meeting, for example. Noise level. Some activities require, like the one I'm doing right now, require a certain level of quiet so that I can make the recording without too much background noise. Others don't. Tools required. As I'm making this podcast, I'm speaking into my microphone. So obviously that's a tool that's required for this particular time demand. So you can tag time demands with the other requirements that you need. I'm using a laptop also. I'm using a second screen. I have my window open. So one of the requirements is that there be a nice cross breeze so that it doesn't get too hot in here, because I've had to close the doors to prevent the noise from coming in. Caffeine. How much caffeine is required? Some activities require caffeine. some don't. So you could also implicitly tag your time demand with a copy requirement. The name of a project, if there is a name of a project. The danger of it being incomplete, high, medium, low. You know, what phase is it in? Is it urgent? Is it not urgent? How much traffic is involved if you need to commute somewhere? Is it crazy traffic or is it just okay traffic? And how far do you have to travel? Is it a short distance away or a long distance away? So our minds very quickly go through quite a few of these implicit tags if you think about it. When you create a time demand, the mind is extremely quick in characterizing every single time demand that gets created. It's important because execution sometimes relies on first, accurate tagging, and second, an ability to recall a tag for later usage. But the most impactful tag of all, from what I can tell, is what I call a temporal tag. It's a tag about when you're actually going to be completing the item. And that's particularly true for people who are time starved, people whose schedules are already full. When they create time demands, the first question they ask themselves is, when am I going to get this done? Because if they don't create the right amount of time on the right day, it absolutely won't get done. Which leads us to actually an interesting conclusion. How do you convert implicit tags in your mind to explicit tags in the real world? So I've just listed up maybe 10 or 15 different implicit tags that we may use depending on the time demand. Probably won't use all, probably only a subset, and probably use some of them only rarely. However, when we make the transition from an implicit tag to an explicit tag, we know that we can't, for example, make a list that has 15 or 20 different tags for every single task or every single reminder. In no time, the list or the calendar with all of these tags would become onerous, and the task of managing these tags would become a burden. People report that when they try to use tags to manage their task lists or their calendars, it quickly becomes a burden. And we think we've figured out the reason why. Reason is that you should only use a minimum number of tags, and therefore the tags on any particular time demand should only relate to your scarcest resource. So if time is your scarcest resource, then when you take a time demand, or when you create a representation of a time demand in the real world, you should probably use a calendar. Because a calendar is an awesome way to, at the same time you make a representation or reminder of a time demand that you have in your memory, because it's a calendar, you're assigning it a time and you're actually forced, let's put it that way, to give it a particular time slot. So the explicit tag in the case of someone who is time starved is almost always going to be when this activity starts and how long I'm planning for it to take. Now, someone who is not time starved may not use their calendar that way. And there's many, many people, for example, who don't. Many, many people follow the advice of authors like David Allen, and they use tags that are related to location. So for them, time is not the scarcest resource. Perhaps it's location. So I can only do certain things in certain locations. For example, if I'm a salesperson, I used to have a job as a salesperson for a t-shirt company. And I traveled all the way up and down the East Coast from the southern tip of Florida all the way to the most northern city in Maine. I covered that entire territory. So I could only visit the prospects in each city that actually were in that city. I couldn't visit, obviously couldn't visit someone in Miami while I was down in Key West. I had to be in that city. So I'd have a list of all of the prospects who had an office or a store in that particular city. So in other words, I was tagging time demands using location, because location was a scarce resource in that particular instance, not time. So many people who tag using geography or location are doing so because the scarcest resource for them is not time, it's geography. For other people, it may be something like equipment. So if I'm someone who works in the office all day, but I only have access or I only have access to a computer if I make a specific request to be able to have that computer available to me, then I may think very well that time is not my scarce resource, neither is location. It could be the equipment that I use at any particular point in time. And making sure that the equipment is ready and available at the moment that I need it could be the way that I need to tag my time demand. So those are just, you can use any one of the tags that I mentioned before. The trick here is to use the tags that help you to optimize the use of that scarce resource, whether it's time, location, equipment, someone else's attention, quiet time, energy, attention, whatever it might be, is that the tag needs to correspond to whatever resource you're using that you think is the scarcest. And then use that resource to tag the reminder or the representation of the time demand. Optimize the management of those reminders so that you're optimizing the management of the time demands in your mind. So that's the advanced model. It's really all about the notion that when we make a commitment, we create a time demand in our minds. When we create that time demand, we also create different tags or attributes so that we can manage or get a handle on these time demands. We go out into the real world and we do different things that affect the state of that time demand. We create reminders so that we can get it done. We create calendar items so that we can get it done. We ask people to let us. We do all these different things. Mainly what we're looking for is successful completion of that time demand, which would reflect one small step in completing our commitments, which of course is all important to us, every single human being on the planet. When we don't effectively manage time demands, we fall prey to what's called the Zeigarnik effect. It's the subconscious mind's way of pinging the conscious mind. So there's some very recent research done by Boymeister and Masicampo. They updated the original research done by Bloomer Zeigarnik. And as I mentioned before, the Zeigarnik effect is when the subconscious mind pings the conscious mind to remind it, don't forget to pick up the milk. If you've ever had the notion that there's something preying on your mind, your mind is trying to remind you to not to forget to do something, that's the Zeigarnik effect at work. So what Masicampo and Boymeister discovered is if you manage your time demands well, the Zeigarnik effect goes away. So in other words, if you create an effective reminder of that time demand in your mind, in a list or on your smartphone or on a calendar, or you remind your administrative assistant to stop you and remind you on the way home to pick up the milk, if you can create a reliable reminder that your mind trusts, the Zeigarnik effect goes away. In other words, your subconscious stops pinging your conscious mind. That nagging feeling, in other words, goes away. Instead, your mind is now trusting that your system is going to allow you to not forget, or in other words, allow you to remember. So the advanced model is another way of looking at time demands. It opens up some new ways of thinking about it. Again, this is just the beginning of our research in this particular area, the advanced model, something that was created after we compared time demands to the way we think about atoms. You know, when you first learn about atoms in school, an atom is something similar to the solar system. It has a planet in the middle and all these planets circling it in orbits. That's the third or fourth grade definition. But by the time you get to college and learn about the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle and some quantum mechanics, you realize that that model is very basic, it's not complete. And there's another model which says that it's an atom is actually based on probabilistic concerns, and that the location of any particle in time changes when you view it or changes when you examine it. And it's all based on probability. And it actually changes state depending on who is observing it and for how long. So we use that notion to transfer to this motion. The simple model of a time demand is one in which there's something like a physical object. The advanced model is one in which there's something like an imaginary object. one that stays in the mind, one that changes state depending on what you do in the real world. Something that's not fixed, doesn't have semi-physical properties, but something that changes shape and changes its very essence depending on the actions that you take. Those are the two models. The advanced model is the one that we're really excited about. When my next book comes out, it's called Perfect Time-Based Productivity, A Professional Approach. It's going to describe both of these models, and really we are just beginning to research the potential of viewing time demands in this very new way. If you'd like to stay in touch with some of the work that we're doing in the area of research and science of time management, visit my website at www.2time-sys.com and download my special report, 8 AGI Ideas from Time Management 2.0. If you're interested in reading a chapter from my past book and want to get early notification on my next book, visit http://perfect.mytimedesign.com. That's the website for both books. So this is Francis Wade signing out from the 2Time Labs podcast. Take care and all the best.